welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 486 for Wednesday, the 2nd of March 2016. My name is Harry Lloyd. I have a bit of a spring in my step. Today's been an excellent news day for Motopod. We have a couple of special announcements. First of all is that Dave Neal, who's here with me this show, will be coming to the Barcelona MotoGP race. How is it going, Dave?
Hey, Harry. Yeah, looking forward to coming over to seeing you, mate, and looking forward to going to Barcelona. First time I've been to Barcelona in general and to the race circuit, so it's another one to be ticked off for me. Looking forward to get a little bit of sun on my back and you see, you know, the sight of many a battle, and hopefully another battle this year, and the whole ambience of being at the Catalan GP. I really can't wait, mate. Really can't wait. And certainly. I get to see your happy smiling face as well.
Exactly.
We can have maybe a special Motopod show from there. Depending on what time we've got, maybe a little bit of a post-race show in the bar afterwards, maybe.
We will definitely do something a bit special, just like Jules and Martin did. Speaking of Martin Darlington, obviously he loves mentioning that he was at Catalunya for that infamous race.
Yeah, it's on the outside of the last turn.
But we have gotten confirmation that Martin, our man in the desert, will be using his desert superpowers to attend the MotoGP test there coming up this week. So I know that he already has at least one or two interviews lined up. So expect a pretty fun show next week with some interviews from the MotoGP Qatar test. Always great when we can use Martin's somewhat strange geographical location to our advantage.
Strange geographic location, strange time zone compared to us and going forward across the pond. It's just we try and link up somehow, and hopefully backing up on that with Martin's efforts this week, which I'm really looking forward to. Have a great time, mate. Hopefully Martin may be on the show next week as well to talk about his time there and introduce the interviews that he had. It'd be nice to hear Martin back on the show.
Yes, obviously we do have MotoGP and Moto 2 and 3 testing coming up this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, MotoGP in Qatar, and then a Moto 2 and Moto 3 in Jerez. But the big news this week is that racing is back. We had three excellent races in Phillip Island. We'll get to those in a second. But first of all, a big thank you to Carl Marsh, our new subscriber, and also to James Kirkpatrick for his most generous donation. As we say, those donations and subscriptions really do help keep us going and do help us do things like bring Dave to Barcelona or send Martin out there to Qatar. So if you do have any spare money down the back of the couch, anything from 1 cent to $10 or plus really does help. Motopodcast.com, down the left-hand side, there's a PayPal link. Every little or every lot really is appreciated. And helps us keep going along.
It really does. Carl, James, thank you very much indeed. We really appreciate that. We've had some listener feedback this week.
A fair bit,
yeah. It's been pretty good. It's continuing as it started earlier in the year. Listener feedback, we know, as always, we should always send it to motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to all the hosts. So if you want to point out someone individually, you've got a question for an individual host, or just a general request for all of us, then by all means, motopod@motopodcast.com. Invariably, we'll reply directly, or sometimes if we don't get that, then you're definitely going to appear on the show anyway. So it depends what you want. You can have a personal response or you can have a show response. In some cases, having a mention on the show really does make a person's day. It did mine when I used to write in, so, and I know it did with Martin as well when he did. And sometimes you never know where it could lead up. Look, hey, we're two of us are hosts on the show already.
Exactly. So our first bit of listener feedback is a bit of a tip for anyone in the US of A from Greg. Greg says, just an FYI for those who don't have an archaic cable television contract. You can also access Be In Sport, who have the rights to MotoGP and World Superbike, using FUBOTV, Fubo TV, for $9.99 a month. So if you're in the US and are looking for an alternative way to get your racing action, then go there. From what I've seen / heard, it does seem like Be In Sport is using the world feed. I know that definitely for World Superbikes, they were using the world feed with Gregory Haynes and former MCN man / friend of the show, Steve English. Then we also got some feedback from Grant Heffernan, a familiar name on the show. And this was one of a couple of emails that we had about the new World Superbike format. Obviously, we'll talk about that when we get to the racing in more depth. But Grant says, perhaps it's just me, but I get the impression that Superbike's biggest issue right now is trying to overhype itself. This is war, he says in quotes. I believe that was a title for a race preview on worldsuperbike.com. I could be wrong, though. So he says, this is war feels like a bridge too far in describing race one at Phillip Island. Which was okay at best and certainly not laced with anything I'd hereafter describe as war. Just quickly on that point, lots of articles, especially if you are reading MotoGP.com or WorldSuperbike.com, you're always going to have a bit of overhyping there. The same with commentary, you know, it's especially as the official site in the case of MotoGP.com and WorldSuperbike.com, it's sort of their job to overhype it, you know.
It's a marketing thing. They've got to sell it to the watching public.
Yeah, you can't just say, oh yeah, Lorenzo pissed off and won by 5 seconds again. Marquez was, you know, 2 seconds ahead of Rossi. That was about it, really.
You can't, because you're going to end up into the yada, yada, yada headlines, aren't you? Yeah, well, he did this and he did that. Yeah. It takes on a little bit of apathy in that respect.
Yeah, but yeah, it can be...
You can't do that. BSB do the same thing. Yeah. Every race series promotes their race series as best they can, and they always will. It's a marketing thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be quite, you know, quite difficult to find that balance between, you know, being realistic and then also the marketing. But Grant continues, I should back up. It was literally the 11th hour, well, 23rd, 11 p.m. local time, when I signed up for the Superbike video pass. I haven't watched a season of Superbike in at least a decade. Wow, that's a long time.
It is.
It was largely brought on by a latent desire to have this winter be over, but also due to a strange desire I have regarding drivers, riders, moving from the top series into, air quotes, lower ones, namely, that they will crush their competition. While I know Nicky is past his sell-by date, I was hoping for a better showing than ninth. That was obviously ninth in race one. I'll put in now that Hayden, along with many other riders, did have one or two tyre issues in race one, and that race two, which this email was sent before, Nicky did much better.
Yeah, he did.
I had much the same thing happen when JPM went from F1 to NASCAR. I think that's
Juan Pablo Montoya.
Yes, exactly. I could care less about NASCAR, but I desperately wanted to see a JPM destroy the rest of the field. So I watched for something like a season. It never happened, even on road courses, and I should have learned my lesson.
Wow.
In any case, I don't think I'll regret paying for a season of Superbike, but I hope they ease up on the sales pitch. It'll get better in due time, or it will fall apart entirely and we can start over. But either way, the front group at least looks to be of a decent size, but holy shit. They guys are way too, there's guys way too slow to be safe. In Superbike especially, you do really get a division between those top 15 and then sort of those guys who you can tell are paying to ride, unfortunately.
But that's something that's happened for a while now. That's happened, and that's testament with Grant not looking at it for the last 10 years, or the last 3 or 4 years, that's always been the case.
Yeah, you know, Team Toth are unfortunately, it's quite a good weekend if they finish within a lap of the winner, to be honest.
It is.
That's sort of the unfortunate thing. But, you know, MotoGP with the CRT era went through a similar thing, and sometimes you do need those back markers to keep things trucking along before it can become resurgent.
And we don't want a grid of just 12 or 15 riders, do we?
Yeah, exactly. You know, definitely when MotoGP had issues similar to that, it wasn't great to watch. It does seem like Superbikes is getting a bit more attention now. You know, they had a complete overhaul of the visual package for the TV broadcast, which was pretty needed.
They're making efforts in the right direction. I understand Grant's points in the fact that, the series was looking a little bit tired in that respect. The competition wasn't particularly great. It hasn't had a season of needle for a while. We've had some good seasons. There's been some good racing, but of late, and people only remember sort of the last race more than anything else, don't they? Especially if you haven't been watching it for a decade. Hopefully now Grant will carry on with this, because I think really everybody's trying their best to put. I'm not, as if Grant listens to the show on a regular basis, which I know he does, I'm not the biggest advocate of World Superbikes. If I miss it and I'm not on the show, then I miss it. It's not one that I will go out the way to look back on and, you know, look onto YouTube or whatever and find the races on there. But after this weekend, we know we always have a decent start at Phillip Island. Traditionally, Phillip Island throws up great racing. In the nature of the circuit, shakedown, everybody's on a reasonable par, and it always throws up good racing. The litmus test will be the next couple of three rounds to see how things pan out that way. But yeah, hopefully, once things get underway, and with Dorna being keen to promote World Superbikes, and to especially look at the attendances at each circuit, they have to hype it up to get people through the gates the best they can, which is why they've changed the format to the Saturday race and the Sunday race. And it just to try and get more people in on a Saturday rather than a Sunday, try and spread the love, if you like, over a weekend. If the guys that can't make it on a Sunday, they can go on the Saturday and still see a race.
Yeah.
So hedging the percentages, you're going to get a few more people on a Saturday that maybe can't make it on the Sunday. But overall, I think Dorna and the organisers in general and the teams are going in the right direction for this. And with the added excitement of Yamaha returning in a factory sense, you know, it's building up to where it almost, it's almost building up to where it used to be.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it'll ever be, you know, quite the Carl Fogarty or even Troy Bayliss.
Not at all.
Colin Edwards era.
No, but you can look at what happened over the weekend with the four manufacturers
filling
the top eight places that were relatively close. Nobody pissed off at the front.
Yeah, it's no longer Biaggi and Laverty finishing 1-2.
No, exactly. And, it, you know, we've had that in the past where, you know, it's like, great, we know who's going to win. All right, okay, we've got an idea that it might be a green bike.
Yeah, but, you know, you have,
that's not
you have that
change.
In MotoGP
that's just
as
the beauty
well.
Of, you know. Exactly right, exactly right. It's either going to be a green bike or a red bike with a possibility of a white bike at the moment. Would you disagree?
No.
There's six riders there, and it's any one of those six that can make the podium rather than any one of four.
Yeah.
So it's starting to improve in that sense. And I hope Grant sticks with that, and that we can have some more feedback from him later in the season to see how that's developing for him. That'd be an interesting one, Grant. If you're listening, by all means, keep us up to date with how you're thinking and how it's like, what it's like going forward, and we'll keep bringing that back to the listeners.
Yep, certainly. And now moving on to Skyler Vicroy. Skyler was he's talking about the 1-2 race format. I personally didn't really feel the benefit or effects of this. I had to watch both races back on replay because I was away on the weekend. But any listeners out there, please do send in your emails about how you thought the 2-day race format worked. It seemed like, from what I saw, opinion was quite divided. Some people really liked it, others didn't really. Dave and I both sort of touched on it last week, how it could be a benefit, but interesting to see what everyone out there in Motopod land thinks. Moving on to Skyler's email, and this, I should say again, that Skyler sent this after race one and before race two, so Saturday evening-ish.
So there's always a point. There's a point now.
Double the emails.
They're going to bang on the keyboard after race one with 24 hours between races. But nobody's backed up with an after race two email. Come on, guys.
Yes.
You do it after race one. Let's have an after race two one as well.
Exactly. So anyway, Skyler says, a new season has begun and I'm really excited to see how things shape for the best season ever. One thing I'm not too sure about is the new World Superbike format. They're now splitting the races, and I, for one, do not think that they're going to help bring in new fans. For starters, there is only so much time people can dedicate to racing or leisure activities on the weekend. It's going to be hard to get new fans to come out for 2 days of racing. Now, you may be thinking that it's good because people can pick a day and get to see a race. While this may be true, I don't see ticket prices coming down. So now you're going to be getting less for your money, basically. Here in the US, we don't even get World Super Sport, as we would get a single race for $60 to $90, depending on the day. And it gets worse if you buy at the gate. Who the hell is going to pay that much to see a 45-minute race that they don't know much about, let alone bring their family and or friends? Remember, casuals, not hardcores. I understand that there are going to be support races, but there does not feel the need for the world spectacle. While I agree with the guy who emailed in last week on the split races being good for online viewing, I do not agree that it will bring in casuals or be good for casuals. Anyone who buys a season pass is not a casual. You have made a commitment of money to watch the racing. Casuals checking out the racing when it's on. I work with a couple of people who are casual watchers, mainly due to my obsessing about checking the races out. And they would definitely watch when it's on, but no way would they pay to watch online. I will be going to the race and camping, but I am one of the crazies.
Yeah.
While it will be cool to see racing on both days, I'm not a fan of the new format. I hope I'm wrong, and all of this helps World Superbike to grow. P.S. Just finished race one of PI. OMG, what a race. So, yep, Skylar, be interesting to hear your thoughts after race two. I'd say that your PS probably applies to race two as well. Because, yeah, there were some good races.
Yeah, they were, weren't they? It's another one there, but he's right as regards to the casuals. That's another email that would be interesting to follow on to see where that develops into as well. Because we've got Buriram coming up, and I think it's the week after next.
Yeah.
And then we head to Europe. It's always difficult for the guys in the States because of the time differences as well.
Mm.
And I understand that they're the ones that get hit the hardest because of the time scales and having to do that on both days now, rather than just allocating a chunk of time to sit there and go, bang, let's watch the races. As we had some feedback last week, I think, to that effect, to say I'd rather sit there and watch it in one big chunk than watch it in two halves. Over 2 days. It takes up the weekend, really, doesn't it? And especially if they have to be up late, stroke early.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. It's
not an easy one. It's easy to go back and watch it at their leisure off YouTube or through Fubo.tv, whichever it was.
Yeah.
Fubo.tv.
I think it's one of these things of you're never going to make everyone happy, right? It's almost impossible. You know, there are going to be some people who do like the new format. There are going to be some who don't. And, you know, unfortunately for people who don't, at least for this season, you just have to live with it, you know?
You do. You can only please some of the people some of the time. And that's only from Dawn, not from Harper. That's not us being flippant. That's just how it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
with most things in racing.
Yeah, and, you know, with a lot of things in life as well, you know? Yeah, anyway.
I nearly said that. Yeah, well spotted.
On the same wavelength.
Went to that one. We are indeed. Mike Allen also sent him. Mike Aitken. I've got my contact lenses in, not my glasses on, so I have to squint. Mike Aitken sent a message in. I just listened to your podcast. It's great. Thanks. Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate the kind words. However, I think you may misunderstand how a coach, or at least a good one, goes about coaching. This relates back to when we spoke last week about the rider coaches coming in and Valentino Rossi having Loris Caparossi out spotting
Catalora.
Luca Cadalora. My apologies.
Different LC Italian.
Yeah, it's true. I know you've picked me up on that one. Mate, I've been to the gym. It's all a little bit airy. So Luca Cadalora out spotting for him recently. He says, a coach doesn't tell, he asks. Questions, challenges, help set goals, understand complexity and figure out priorities. I do this in a business context and I know when I'm doing a good job when the big cheese boss responds to a question with, ooh, that's a good question. There's also two level of changes that can be made in the spec ECU. Changes that the pit crew can make in the garage based on rider feedback. And then there's functional algorithm changes that manufacturers can submit to the spec software for future inclusion for everyone to use, which I think we did cover at that point, didn't we?
We've mentioned it on the show at some point.
When one of the manufacturers wants to make a change, they can submit it and it'll be in future inclusion for everybody to use. But interesting that Mike goes on about the rider coach. As I said, he doesn't actually tell him what to do. He's asking questions and challenges and looking and going in that respect more than saying, you need to do this, you need to do that. He's not riding the bike. Mm. The rider is riding the bike. He needs to understand in his head what he's doing. Mm. Stefan Prine being a prime example at Mark VDS.
Yes, hopefully Martin can catch up with Stefan Prine and maybe we'll set Martin that job for the Qatar test is to find out exactly how a rider coach goes about
coaching.
That's
a great shout.
So Martin, I hope you're listening to this episode.
Yes, Martin, go and talk to Stefan Prine again, please.
Yep. And moving on to a bit of errata. We haven't had a bit of errata in a while, but Craig Lowe sent an email in about my pronunciation of bonsai. So obviously bonsai is a small Japanese tree. And bonsai, which I have always said the same way, maybe I've been wrong my whole life.
Banzai,
maybe it's meant to be said more like that, is
it's B-A-N-Z-A-I.
A banzai lap, you know, like a do or die lap.
Yeah.
So yes, thank you Craig Lowe for picking me up on that. As we've established throughout Motopod history, pronunciation of foreign words can be quite difficult. It took me about 4 shows to figure out how to say Fabio Quartararo, and that's not even that hard.
And that's not too bad. And, even chassis a struggle for you sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So now with Toprak Razgatiagolu, now with him making his World Superbike debut.
Who's that?
Toprak Razgatiagolu.
Brilliant.
So yeah, I guess that transitions into news quite well. Toprak made his World Superbike debut. Because Josh Hook, as we'd mentioned, had injured his shoulder. Toprak was ahead of Carol Abraham in practice, pretty good. It was the Young Turk's first time on a superbike, but then unfortunately he crashed and broke, I believe it was his left ankle, so Toprak couldn't race, but pretty strong debut from the youngster in superbikes anyway, and he'll be competing in Stock 1000 this year, so one to watch.
Another fast Turk.
Yeah.
Nice to see. News coming up, we have, there's not been a huge amount of news over the last week or so. It's all gone a little bit quiet while everybody gets ready for testing. The BSB boys are heading to Spain. As you said earlier, MotoGP are going to Qatar. 2 and 3 are at Jerez, so everything's gone a little bit quiet. One thing that was announced this week is that Yamaha have joined forces with the VR46 Riders Academy. They're going to supply them with the bikes for this year, and they also will get the first picks on talent, which is fairly ominous. And will help bring in some Asian riders as well, as that's a big target market for a lot of the Japanese manufacturers.
Yeah, and for me, this is really interesting because we've talked about on the show a bit that Honda have this quite clear progression path. You know, you can pretty much stay with the Australia Galicia team from the time you're in pre-Moto 3 to CEV to Moto 3 to Moto 2 and then to MotoGP. So Honda have that path, whereas that's Yamaha right. have never really had that path. They've sort of had to snipe Moto 2 riders whenever they could. But now this gives them a chance to say, okay, look, we know that we as Yamaha don't have a Moto 3 bike, but you know, say that you go to that KTM ride instead of that Honda ride, and then, you know, you spend a year or two in Moto 2, we'll then give you a factory contract. So I think this does, and this is probably the biggest part of this announcement for me, is that Yamaha are very much sort of setting up their own training camp and not quite Red Bull rookie structure, but certainly a way to, you know, to scout for talent. And then, you know, as you said, to bring in riders from the Asian market to not only help train them, but to then also get first picks on them. So I think that this move will pay off a lot more in the long term for Yamaha, and you know, the financial cost of chucking a couple of, you know, YZF 250s and R3s at Rossi will probably be recouped pretty quick.
I think so too. And also, if you want to go down that career path with Yamaha, and as the Spaniards have with Honda, it maybe gives a little bit of a boost to the Italian riders to go, well, okay, look, we can go this way. The Spanish riders have CEV and they can go Repsol in that sense. The Italian riders can go through the VR46 Academy. And having VR46 obviously over the head of it as well. As you say, the smaller classes, Moto 3, Moto 2, don't have the Yamaha machinery, but they do have access to those teams. And they say, well, okay, this is what we'll do. As you say, here's a Yamaha contract. Here's your dangling carrot. This is what we'll do. We'll look after you. We'll put you in that team. And then you go to that team for 2 years. And then you come to the MotoGP. And this is where we'll be.
So I wouldn't expect many young Italians on Honda Moto 3s.
No, there'll be KTMs at least.
Yeah, and you know, the VR46 Academy, they run with the Sky team in Moto 3, and then they have their own junior team in the SEV. So, you know, there is sort of already a relationship between KTM and the VR46 Academy. But
that would be one to look out for, though, if one of the VR46 riders did ride a Honda. If the talent's there and they're fast enough.
Right now, the only one in the VR46 Academy on a Honda, I believe, is Niccolò Antonelli. And then obviously Baldassare, Morbidelli, and Marini in Moto 2. But Moto 2, that's a Honda engine, but it's not really a publicised Honda engine.
No, it isn't. No, they don't all go around with HRC stickers on, do they?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's that's just a Honda engine rather than a HRC one. So yeah, and I understand from that. But it's good to see that there's career paths forged. And again, if you've got the talent and you're fast enough, you'll end up where you want to be.
Yeah. And
did I read something? I think I can't remember who or where. It was on social media somewhere, and maybe you know about this, but it was just something that I caught on Twitter. Paul Espargaro.
Oh yes.
You know where I'm going to go, don't you? There's nothing actually. I've not seen. I don't think I've ever seen a news article.
I believe there's an article on. I think it's motorsport.com has the full interview.
Okay.
But yes, why don't you go ahead with the quote and then I'll expand on it a bit.
It's just something I haven't got the quote. It's just something I saw on Twitter that he's ready for jumping ship from Yamaha. He doesn't want to race for Yamaha next season.
Sort of. I can't remember the exact quote either. I'll include a link to this interview.
Sorry to the listeners. It's just something that came to me while we were talking.
I'll include a link to this in the show notes if anyone does want to read through it specifically.
Thanks.
But basically, Paul Espargaro said, you know, Yamaha haven't held up their end of the bargain. He mentioned a couple of things that Paul Espargaro is contracted to Yamaha as an air quotes factory rider, not to Tech 3 like Bradley Smith is. So in theory, Paul Espargaro should get all of the upgrades that, say, Valentino Rossi or Jorge Lorenzo get, or, you know, maybe one step behind. But Paul Espargaro said, you know, I'm meant to be a factory rider. I never got the seamless gearbox last year. We had 5 engines available and I only ever used 3 throughout the whole year. So it seems like Paul Espargaro, as you say, probably won't be riding for Yamaha next year.
Does sound a little bit like sour grapes as well.
A bit, especially if you read this article on motorsport.com, is that, you know, another line he said was something about, like, in my first year, Yamaha wanted results and I got those results. And then in the second year, they gave me nothing, is more or less what he's saying.
But you're only going to get so much in a satellite team anyway.
Yeah.
To a degree. But did Bradley get more than he did?
No, Bradley definitely did not get more than Paul Espargaro did.
So therefore, where's the problem?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I know that's a little bit glossing over it, but you know, if Bradley's not getting them and Paul and Bradley is outpacing him, what does he want? Does he want better equipment to outpace Bradley?
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest.
I'm just offering it out there. I don't know anything anymore. I'm just wondering what's basically caused that.
Yeah, I mean,
that's quite a big thing to come out with at the start of the season.
Yes, you know, you'd think that he'd at least wait a race or two, but maybe he has a Ducati contract in the back of his pocket or something.
Maybe he does.
But yeah, no, it was very odd to see. As I said, motorsport.com does have that full article, so check out the show notes for that. Going back sort of to some of the emails that we got about the race format, on motomatters.com, David Emmett wrote that the attendance figures for Phillip Island was about 75% of the MotoGP attendance, and for a World Superbike round, that's pretty good. So at least in Phillip Island, it doesn't seem like the split format has had a huge impact.
Good. When you look on the TV coverage, there was plenty of people lining the circuit. It wasn't barren as you look at Portimao. I know obviously it's a smaller track and it's a more historic track where you get people stood at the fences. More so, you know, like Donington and stuff like that, whereas Portimao's all grandstands. Anywhere where there's grandstands, it's always going to look far more barren than maybe it is. But this, all the way around the track where the spectators could stand, they were 3 or 4 deep. It was really positive to see.
Yep, certainly. And with that, it's time to talk about the first race of the year. World Superbike Superpole. Not really a race, but you know what I'm saying. Tom Sykes, back to his old self on pole with a 130.020, just ahead of Davide Giuliano, with Jonathan Rea in third and just 0.150 back on his teammate. No more qualifying tyres in World Superbike, so I don't think we'll see quite as crazy lap times as we used to, but all of the top 10 were within 0.8 of a second of each other in
that
Super Pole session. Yeah, that's really good. A couple of good results for Gintoli and Lowe's, 4th and 5th, Vandermark, 6th and 7th. So, you know, in that top 8, you have both the Kawasaki's, A Ducati, both the Yamahas, both the Hondas, Lorenzo Salvadori in 8th on the Aprilia. So a nice mix of manufacturers, and good to see both those Hondas and the Yamahas up there in qualifying. As we said at the top of the show, Phillip Island, bit of an odd circuit. As we always say, emphasizes bravery over perhaps good machinery.
Yeah,
and also is the first race of the year in World Superbike. That adds an extra bit of a twist. I'd be cautious in saying that, you know, the season is going to go X, Y, and Z this early.
I'm not going to say just yet. No, it is far too early. There's one thing that you can be certain of, and that's that everything is uncertain.
Yes. And then as we got to race one in World Superbikes, unfortunate race for Lowe's, as he had quite a nasty crash.
He did. I mean, for some reason, Phillip Island doesn't love Alex Lowe's. The last couple of times he's been there, he's had nothing but problems. And starting off, you know, obviously a great qualifying on the Yamaha at Phillip Island, and he qualified in 5th place. So he was on the outside of, in the middle of row 2. Which is great, you know, and he'd done well. He'd done a decent turn in qualifying, and everything seemed to be going in the right direction. But unfortunately, the crash in race one sort of set up the rest of his weekend, really. Something that he really could have done without.
Yeah, certainly Lowe's had a really difficult one, but as Lowe's crashed out, the race at the front was really, really, really good.
It was outstanding.
You had Jonathan and Sykes, they were both leading for a bit, then Davies and Vandermark and Giuliano, they were sitting behind and sort of having their own tussle, and it was a great race to see. At the end, in that last lap, they did spread out a bit, unfortunately, with Jonathan taking the first win of the year ahead of Chaz Davies, and then Michael Vandermark in third. Vandermark had a really strong race. Vandermark as aggressive as ever.
Some of his lines are completely different to one or two others, especially through the Southern Loop.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that he's a 600 rider at heart, because he was carrying so much corner speed that Honda.
Turn one, certainly, he closed up massively on the guys in front of him every time. And it's like sort of having to maybe roll off or sit it up, taking those sweeping lines to keep that corner speed. I mean, maybe that's what he has to do on the Honda, because he doesn't have the upper grunt of the Ducati and and the Kawasaki. So he's got to ride that deliberately fast through the turns to be able to keep up with them, because he doesn't have the legs overall.
Mm. And Tenkali Honda, they said that this is the most prepared that they've been for a start of a season in a couple of years, and it showed, as we say.
It did.
Vandermark in third. Hayden, disappointing race in ninth, but as we said at the top of the show, Hayden did have some tyre troubles. There were tyre troubles throughout the field, as often happens at Phillip Island.
Even Tom Sykes.
Yes, Tom Sykes, he was struggling with the front end, I believe. Marcus Ritterberger on the last corner of the last lap, his rear tyre had an issue. I believe I read that it exploded, which is never good.
That's my fault for putting him in my fantasy race team.
Yes, Keenan Sefoglu, as we'll get to in Supersport, he had a similar tyre issue. Unfortunately, tyre issues and tyre management seem to come hand in hand with Phillip Island. Bridgestone have issues.
Whether that's MotoGP or World Superbikes, it happens to both, doesn't it? Whether you're on Bridgestones, Michelins or Pirellis.
Yeah, or even Dunlops. Dunlops had huge issue in Moto2 there.
Because they shortened the race, didn't they? They took it down to 75% or whatever it was, because they weren't expecting the tyres to last.
Yeah, the year it got resurfaced. So, yeah, disappointing to see those tyre issues, but it does seem like it's one of those things that's sort of unavoidable. And apart from Sykes in that top five, none of the other riders really had too many issues. A great ride from Leon Camier in seventh on that MV Augusta.
He came back well. He came from, if I go back up to the top, where he qualified 10th. Mm. So, he did really well off the start and on the MV, which you're not really sure on its reliability.
No.
As we find in race two, but certainly in race one, he was one of the fastest riders out there, which was great to see, and a great fillip for him as being a development rider over last year and coming into this year, because you're not going to expect the MV to be a front runner at this point, not when he's the only man that's trying to campaign it forward. Mm. There's a lot of weight on his shoulders, and when he's been through with Aprilia and coming back off the back of his British Superbike title in 2009. There's a lot of weight on his fairly young shoulders, and to take it forward to that result is superb. Couldn't be happier for him.
Yeah, good ride from Josh Brooks as well in 10th in race one. Brooks had qualified in 14th, so a nice fight through from the reigning British Superbike champion. Brooks and Abraham, and both the Altea BMWs as well, they all seem to be having a bit of trouble sorting out the electronics on that BMW 1000RR. So I think it'll take one or two rounds before we see what the likes of Brooks, Torres, Reiterberger and Abraham are really capable of.
That's a race within a race, isn't it, to see who can get those electronics sorted out first. So that's a secondary race, if you like, to see how those guys get on and see who can sort it out first. Is it going to be the Milwaukee boys, or will it be the Altea boys? That's going to be an interesting one. Going back to Tom Sykes, when Jonathan Rea passed him, it seemed to spook him again. We've seen this before, haven't we? Now, maybe, I don't know whether it spooked him or it's a combination of that and the tyre issues, because it seemed he tried hard to break away at the beginning to try and break the field as best he could. Obviously, he had the pace from qualifying on pole, but that was only over a handful of laps. And nobody actually did a full race simulation apart from Jonathan Rea, the full 22 lap race simulation. Vandermark, I think, was next. He did 17 laps. Jonathan Rea was the only one that did the full race simulation in free practice. So he knew what was going to happen with the tyres. He knew what was going to, you know, what was to be, what was expected. And seeing that Sykes dropped back. I mean, one thing that was really impressive to see, I know it was a little Formula One-esque at one point, but it was great to see that the riders line astern in manufacturer manufacturer order, if you like. Two Kawasaki's, two Ducatis, two Hondas, and the two Yamahas. It was really good, really interesting to see that. Just something a little bit different. But, I mean, Chas Davis, that was a great ride. And yeah. Jonathan did everything he could to hold him up. And as Jonathan went underneath him around the outside at Lukey Heights and into MG, he held it, but he just couldn't hold it long enough, could he? And then this Jonathan took him back. And the horsepower, there's nothing wrong with the horsepower on that Kawasaki. It has the legs of everything, even the Ducati.
Yeah. Davies is definitely developing a reputation for being a save it for the last lap, last corner sort of guy. As we saw a couple of times last year, especially in Sepang, and we saw in both races in Phillip Island, Davies is one who saves his tyres, and then tries to pull out a bit of magic on the last lap. In race one, it didn't quite work. Davies had to settle for second, and then as we'll get to in race two, it really didn't work out.
Didn't work there either.
No.
One thing that is impressive is Jonathan Rea's racecraft. That really shone this weekend, as we come to again in race two. He knew what to expect. And as a thinking man's rider, I think that is something that is ominous for the upcoming season, is that he is really thinking this through and he knows exactly what to expect from his rivals.
Yeah, the other really nice thing I thought about Jonathan Rea was how he celebrated. He pulled over his bike, ran over to the fence, high-fived a bunch of fans, posed for some photos. And
he could have done the full lap of high-fiving. It's like, when do you stop? When do you upset someone by going, sorry, mate, I've run far enough? What do you do? How far do you go? I thought he's going to stop in a minute. He's going to stop. Had a picture with the Northern Ireland flag, which was a real nice touch from the guys on the side there, who had the flag done out like his helmet and with the Ulster flag. And he's like, somebody's going to be really disappointed at someone. They've got their hand and they're just going to be left hanging. It's like, oh, cheers, Johnny. Get back to your bike. It just made me smile because he was so excited. And obviously his wife's from Phillip Island as well. So it is his second home race, if you like. So, you know, it was good to see that first race and good to see him get the win and not disappear off into the distance, but actually fight it out and take it on the penultimate corner.
Yeah, he definitely had to fight for that. You know, as we said, Davies was there until the end. And I think Jonathan sort of knew that Chas Davies would try something like that because, as we mentioned, Davies has done it in the past and is now very quickly developing a bit of a reputation. So maybe throughout the season, that'll be something to watch from Davies to see if he does try and pull out one or two tricks out of the bag so that he doesn't sort of fall into that category of rider that everyone knows, okay, as long as I block in the last two corners, I have this one.
Yeah, and also maybe it'll help him dig deep into his racecraft to think, well, okay, I need to do something different now because Jonathan Rea's gone public saying, I knew what you were going to do.
Yeah.
So it'd be an interesting now to see it. Because he had a good couple of races at Buriram last year, didn't he, as well? So it's he's pretty strong there. So again, I can see the Jonathan Rea and Chas Davies thing going through the season with the cameos, obviously, from the other guys that were around them at the time of Tom Sykes, Giuliano. Your shout before the weekend of Nicky Hayden on the podium, obviously maybe not race one because of the tyre issue.
Yeah, but overall, I'm going to say I was correct because Michael Vandermark got two.
How can you be correct? He didn't finish on the podium.
Because Michael Vandermark got two podiums and then Hayden was fourth. So that's basically like
all right,
Hayden
so
on the podium.
So the podium goes top four now, does it?
Yeah, that's how my argument works. Is that since a Honda was on there twice and Hayden was fourth, when you like add it up together, it's all even.
Brilliant. Listener feedback, motopod@motopodcast.com. Address it to Harry Lloyd. I love that. That's great. So maybe we should have Nicky Hayden on the podium.
Yeah.
But going back to Grant Heffernan's email about Nicky being not washed up, but I forget the phrase that he used, but certainly past his sell-by date. I think that proved at the weekend that certainly from a World Superbike level, he isn't, as we go into now to have a look at race two.
Exactly. And the other important thing to remember is that Hayden is still learning the tyres and how these bikes behave on the track. And one of the comments Hayden made during Phillip Island testing was he was speaking about how much these bikes move around compared to a MotoGP bike. So there is still a lot of adjustment for Hayden to do. So,
Yeah, and there's the electronics, the handling, the chassis aren't as stiff as a MotoGP bike. So, yeah, there's an awful lot of changes for him. I know he's ridden superbikes before, he's AMA champion, but that was a long time ago. He spent a lot of time on, you know, it was 10 years ago this year that he won his MotoGP championship. So he spent a lot of time on prototype races.
Yeah, exactly. Then, yeah, as you say, moving on to race two. Race two, pretty much the same sort of affair, luckily enough, actually.
For Alex Lowes, almost.
Yes, also for Alex Lowes. Lowes had quite a big moment at the start of the race. And then...
He wrote a bike off in warm-up, didn't he?
Yes.
He had a big crash in warm-up and wrote his number one bike off, so he had to use his number two bike for race two. And unfortunately, they not really had much of a shakedown on it. It developed problems, and unfortunately, he couldn't quite hold the pace. But he did score a point at the end. I think he got 14th, didn't he?
Yeah, so 2 points for Lowes, but overall, not really what I was expecting from Lowes. I don't think he'll leave happy. I think that, you know, Pata Yamaha, that they probably know that Lowes can do better, and I think that
And his teammate had a good weekend as well. He was sixth in race one and had a strong race two. He was fifth in race one and also had a pretty strong race two as well. So you've seen your teammate do that. It just compounds the issue sometimes.
Yeah, but as you said, Dave, Phillip Island is sort of one of those circuits that Lowes doesn't get along with. And unfortunately, Phillip Island is a circuit where if you as a rider don't really like it, then it's going to bite you every time you go there. You know, we see with riders like Dovizioso in MotoGP, and then like with Tom Sykes in World Superbikes, Sykes fifth in race one and then sixth in race two. Sykes is another
one. She's an unforgiving son of a bitch.
Yes, Sykes is one who's never really gotten on with Phillip Island. And unfortunately for him, despite leading both races at various points, it doesn't look like Sykes is suddenly going to win a Phillip Island race anytime soon.
It doesn't, does it? You know, he's, for want of his pace in testing and in Superpole, trying to translate that into a full race distance at race pace seems to be something a little bit lacking. I have spoken to a couple of people this week who were close to Tom, and I think what is turning out that he may be having a bit of a problem with the front end of that Kawasaki. There's nothing wrong with the top end. There's nothing wrong with the handling too much from back to front. But once you get to the front, there's one or two of the Kawasaki riders at the minute that are struggling just to get the front end dialed in of that new Kawasaki ZX-10R. As Jonathan Ray said after race two, the bike is about 85% there. And reading into that and what we know of with other riders around and about, it's maybe just that extra 15%. Once they nail that front end feeling, there's always going to be something that's not, you know, you're never going to get a bike to hit the ground running and take it out first time and go, wow, this is 100% great. Even the MotoGP bikes don't do that. So to have it at 85% after the first race, I think is a bit of a success. And obviously a double race win for the world champion. First world champion since Troy Bayliss to win the opening race with a number one plate, I believe.
Yes, I believe that was the fact said during commentary.
It was, because I watched commentary earlier today and I remember, so thank you, Gregory Haynes, for that little nugget.
But yeah, it's going to be sort of worrying for the rest of the field, and especially Tom Sykes, if Ray doing the double was only him at 85%. It's going to need some guys to step up. Chaz Davies, again, was challenging Ray in race two. Davies, yet again, left it till the last lap, made a big lunge, and then slid off.
He did. And I think, again, Jonathan, he braked as late as he possibly could. And he thought, well, if he's going to go up the inside, he's not going to make it. Because as you hear a lot of times in racing, I braked at the very, very, very last minute. And if he's going past me, I know he's not going to make the corner. And it was the same thing. He suckered him in. He left it and left it. And it was, you know, the move in race one was fun. It was he was kind of squirrely going in, but it was a hard but fair move. And it was heading for a similar move this time. But unfortunately, as he made the apex of the corner, the front folded. And unfortunately, that was Chaz out of that battle.
Chaz did eventually remount to finish 10th. So overall, you know, not a terrible weekend for Davies with a second and a tenth, some decent points, and he can go to Thailand and try and work a bit harder. Interestingly, Davies was running a slightly longer swing arm than Giuliano this weekend. The longer swing arm helped Davies to save his tyres, as we said. Davies loving those last couple of laps and trying to sort of build his bike around that, wanting to go for a last-minute lunge.
Yeah, let's see what happens at the next round. That's going to be an interesting one to follow that. But again, Jonathan Rea Imperius, his racecraft was fantastic. The double win, you can't ask for a better start than that from the world champion.
No, and you can't really ask for a much better start from Vandermark either. Third in race one, then second in race two. You know, we always say that Honda, with the Suzuki gone, that Honda is now by far the oldest bike on that grid.
Yeah, it is.
But Vandermark, he made it really work. You know, was that just him working at Phillip Island, or has the Honda taken the step? We'll know, you know, if not after Thailand, certainly once they get to the European rounds, we'll know really where that bike stands.
But that's an impressive step to take on a bike that age.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're still developing it as best they can and trying to get as much power from it as possible. The best superbike weekend by far for Michael Vandermark, and backing up, obviously, we knew what he could do with his efforts at Suzuka. We know the kid can ride. But just he really seems to have brought his A game to Phillip Island. And he could have asked for a better weekend. But I think if you offered him a third and a second before the start of the weekend, he'd have snatched your hand off.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, not just Vandermark, but also Hayden fourth in race two.
Is a podium.
Yes, which is an honorary Motopod podium for Nicky Hayden. Nicky, your Motopod trophy's in the post. So be sure to check your postbox in Owensboro for that one. But yeah, you know, Hayden in fourth, World Superbike rookie. Sure, Hayden's really experienced, but I think it does show that there's life in the Honda. Certainly at Phillip Island, maybe we'll just have to hold every race for World Superbikes at Phillip Island. Because honestly, if the racing was as good as it was across those two, I think that would be okay.
I do. I'm just going to just pour a little bit of water on things at the minute. And it's the same every year. We get massively excited from Phillip Island.
Yeah.
The race twos, and again, thank you to the guys in commentary, Steve English and Gregory Haynes on this one. The race one deficit of whatever it was it 0.3 or something? It was something really daft. Let's have a look. Was it 0.063? Apparently, that didn't even make it into the top five of closest Phillip Island finishes.
Yeah, which is pretty incredible.
That's 0.063, 0.006 of a second, and it doesn't make it into the top five. So we're always going to get decent racing at Phillip Island. We always get close finishes. You know, who could forget the photo finish? Was that Haslam Malandri on the BMWs?
There was that. There was also Haslam and Fabrizio a fair few years ago.
Yeah, which is, you know, the width of tyre tread.
Yeah.
Or the little knobbies that come on a fresh tyre. So I'm just going to pour water. So this isn't going to be the way the World Superbike season pans out, I would hasten to add. We always have, because it's the first races of the year. I'm just playing devil's advocate. You know what it's like. This is the first races of 2016. The motorcycle racing season's back on us. World Superbikes back with a vengeance at Phillip Island that always throws up the decent races. And then we'll go to somewhere else and it'll be like, okay, same old, same old. I really hope that's not the case this year. I really hope that we can continue this. And looking at the development of the bikes and the difficulties that some of the riders have had with their tyres and everything else, that as we go forward, that we are going to get the top five or top eight, you know, covered by 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah, hopefully it can stay this close. Yeah, Ryderberger, he had a good showing as well. You know, in race two, and I think this is sort of the good thing about the two-race format is, you know, you saw in race one that the top BMW was Torres in eighth. Torres was able to go one better in race two and finish seventh. But importantly, it was Torres seventh, Ryderberger eighth, Josh Brooks ninth, and Carol Abraham 11th. So it seems like between those two races that all of the BMW riders were able to make quite a significant step, and one that they may not have been able to do had they only had 3 hours between back-to-back races on Sunday.
No, and that's a good plus point for having the races over separate days. They have an awful lot more time to digest the data, and maybe going to the guys that don't, you know, they're not struck on the Saturday and the Sunday racing. If the guys have got more time to digest the data, more time to develop the bikes, and more time to make changes to the settings, then maybe it will make racing closer overall. Which is what we want at the end of the day. We want close racing. If it's Saturday and a Sunday, there's nothing we can do about that. That's the organisers' decisions. That's something we have to live with. But if we get close racing on both days, then I think that'll soon be forgotten.
Yes, exactly. It may have been close racing, but unfortunately, there's already a bit of a gap in the championship. Unsurprisingly, Jonathan Rea, 50 points, leading it. Somewhat surprisingly, Michael Vandermark in second. I don't think many would have thought that a Honda would have been second in the championship after Phillip Island. Vandermark, 36 points, so Jonathan already a 14-point advantage.
Not the battle for second is going to be close.
Yes, definitely, as it was last year. Giuliano, 29 points, 21 behind Ray. Chaz Davies with 26 points. So from Vandermark to Davies, 10 points difference. Not too bad, but you know, Davies already 24 points back. Then Gintoli and Sykes tied on 21 points, already 29 points back on Jonathan. Sykes especially will not be happy about that. No, I'm sure that, you know, Gintoli will be pretty happy considering that Yamaha's a new bike and after the awful season that Gintoli had last year. But yeah, Sykes, whew. Nicky Hayden, 7th with 20 points ahead of Torres Brooks. Leon Camier in 10th. Romano Ramos, Marcos Ritterberger, Carol Abraham, Lorenzo Salvadori, Alex De Angelis in 15th ahead of Lowe's. Mike Jones, the Australian Superbike wildcard. And then Sylvain Barrier in 18th with 2 points.
Excellent.
Yes, and then on to World Super Sport. World Super Sport has now adapted the air quotes Super Pole / MotoGP qualifying format of the two sessions. And it didn't really throw up any surprises.
No, it didn't. No. The Super Turk, unfortunately, is it? Well, it's not unfortunate. I don't know why I said that. The Super Turk again, heading the front row with the fastest time. It did 1:33, 1:42, which was, you know, it was, to be fair, it was a bus ride ahead of PJ Jacobsen in second place, a good half a second.
Also, just for reference, that 1:33.1 would have put Kenan Sofoglu 19th. On the it would have put him higher. Holy shit. It would have put him, that time would have put him ahead of Alex De Angelis in 18th on the World Superbike grid.
That's not shabby around somewhere like Phillip Island.
No, that's pretty good.
That's impressive. You know, we know the guy can ride. We know that he is, you know, that's his forte.
Mr. Supersport.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is Mr. Supersport. He's tried Moto 2. He's tried World Superbike. This is his forte. This is what he's good at. And he has enough experience and enough knowledge to do what he's doing. As you say, 1:33, 1:42. Superb time. Half second ahead of PJ Jacobsen. But Randy Krumenacker rounding out the front row on his debut in World Supersport. I thought that was a decent ride from the Krumenator.
Yeah, especially after the last 2 years in Moto2, Randy Krumenacker has, much like Ant West and Nico Tirol, not really done much. And they've all three of those guys have sort of more or less been, you know, at best a couple of points in 13th in a race. But World Supersport is now giving all of them pretty much a second lease on life. So good that we can see some guys who were maybe struggling a bit in Moto2 keep mixing it up. And this sort of comes back to a conversation that Len and I had a year ago during this race, is that you see a lot of these guys like Westy, like Gino Rea, like Randy Krumenacker, who struggled in Moto2, they come into World Supersport and they're pretty much immediately in the top 10.
Yeah, and that can only be good, though, for World Supersport. It's had a couple of years in the doldrums, hasn't it? It's been dominated by Sofoglu. And I think this year, obviously, he is the man to beat. He is the man of World Supersport. But I think if you're bringing in riders of that caliber, rather than bringing them through from other series, i.e. Sam Lowes and people, although ultimately Sam Lowes did become World Supersport champion. But if you're bringing people down from Moto2 and bringing guys up from national series, and hopefully, you know, Moto America, they'll throw people into the ring as well that can follow PJ, the British Supersport guys. We know we've already got Luke Stapleford in there and Kyle Ride. So the field is starting to grow, and the talent level of that field, no disrespect to the guys that have gone before, but it has been through a bit of a dip from what was the feature race of the weekend that everybody wanted to watch. It went to being the third race that everybody wanted to watch ahead of the two superbike, behind the two superbike races.
Yeah.
So if you can bring that up to a bit more of a challenge to the World Superbike races and go, oh, great, this is going to be superb. It's a one-off race for the weekend. These guys are, it's the axe murderers class, isn't it? And that's what we need to get back.
Yep, certainly. It was a bit of a disappointing qualifying for Cluzel, who was eighth. Kyle Ride actually did quite well in ninth, his first time at the circuit. Nico Tirole 11th, Westy 13th, Luke Stapleford in 15th, so he probably was looking for a bit better. Bit of drama between Shaky Byrne and Simon Buckmaster on Twitter, if any Motopod fans want to go seek that out. Simon Buckmaster, as ever, makes his feelings well known.
That was a bit of a popcorn moment, but unfortunately I missed it. I didn't see it. And you kindly pointed that out to me while I was shopping over the weekend. Yes. And then reading back through it, that would have been it would have been one of those Twitter popcorn moments. He's like, hang on a minute, boys, don't say anymore. I'm just going to get the popcorn. I just want to sit and watch this. And there were barbs going backwards and forwards. And also as well as what Shane said about what Luke had said about they've not been testing, but then Simon Buckmaster said, yes, they have. And I'm sure that they tested in Spain and they did obviously the 2 or 3 day test at Phillip Island before the race. And when the bikes, they've had the bikes long enough, those bikes aren't brand new.
No,
so they already, they already have the data for the bikes anyway. It's just getting the riders used to. I'm not sticking up for Simon Buckmaster or the CIS team, but you know they've got the data. They've got everything they need in that respect. And then you know Shaky did pass a couple of comments as he was talking through the TV coverage, and it's just like oh dear, oh, there's just some of the tone of the voice and everything else. It's like guys, this is going to run a little bit longer.
Yes. But, you know, despite testing or not testing, it was a cracking World Supersport race. Not such a great race for Jules Cluzel, who had some sort of issue and finished in 17th. Kyle Ride, hugely disappointing, 19th. But he, much like Kenan Sofoglu, had a bit of a tyre problem. Sofoglu was leading quite comfortably in the closing stages of the race. And then Sofoglu just fell off.
He just rolled off the edge of the tyre almost, didn't
he? Yeah. Then when it cut back to Sofoglu in the pits, Sofoglu made it quite clear that the bike just exploded and I jumped off. And by that, he was talking about the rear tyre exploding. There are some photos going around on social media, on Kenan Sofoglu's Twitter, of a rear tyre with a sizable bit of it missing from where it may have exploded. Obviously, yes. Don't know 100% for sure. PJ Jacobson...
We can only just say what we've read.
Yeah, PJ Jacobson, he also had some tyre issues but managed for fifth. Ant West responded to Kenan Sofoglu's tweet on Ant West's Instagram and said, you know, my tyres were okay, maybe if you didn't ride them so hard. I also found a bit of rubber on my foot peg from when you went up the inside of me. So, Ant West.
Did I detect a reasonable grin on the Aussie's face?
Probably.
For announcing Ant West in third.
Yes, as I said, Ant West third.
A proper podium, not a Motopod podium.
No, exactly, a proper podium. But yeah, as we said, you know, there are always a lot of tyre issues at Phillip Island, and someone like Kenan Sofoglu, you know, maybe he was pushing a bit harder than he needed to. He had opened up a pretty sizable gap. But with Sofoglu falling out of the race, it left his teammate and World Supersport debutante? Yeah, I think that's the right word. Randy Krumenacker. He took a maiden victory in World Supersport, as we said, after 2 terrible years in Moto2. Krumenacker back on the podium. I think this is Randy Krumenacker's first time on a podium since something like 2010 in the 125cc class or something ridiculous like that.
Long time missing, and good for him.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Krumenacker has been strong in testing, maybe not quite as strong as Sofoglu, but I think that one win like this could really convert Krumenacker and prove to Krumenacker that coming over to World Supersport was the right move and that maybe he can challenge for the title, and if not the title, certainly the top 3 overall, which would be huge for someone who's struggled to score points for 2 years.
Sure thing. Show me a rider that isn't a confidence rider.
Mm.
Once you knock that confidence, it's so hard to come back from it. And if we can get him keeping in that sort of neck of the woods, top 3, top 4, and showing that he can, you know, he is good enough to compete with these guys against the likes of Ant West, PJ Jacobson, Baldellini, guys, and Gino Rea, guys that have been around for quite a while in World Supersport, and he can come in and do that. And all right, yeah, his teammate did fall out of the race. He was still on a pretty much a guaranteed podium because Sofoglu had gapped Krumenacker. Krumenacker had gapped Caracasolo, West, and Gamarino. So he was on for a podium anyway, but it was just a nice little bonus that he got the win with his teammates' unfortunate disappearance from the timesheets.
Yeah, so Krumenacker 2.7 seconds ahead of Caracasolo, with Ant West in third, just getting out-dragged by that Honda. Westy on a privateer Yamaha.
Out-dragged by the Honda? You don't see that very often in production racing.
No, definitely not. But yeah, good for Westy as well. Ant West still looking for a ride for the rest of the year. As we mentioned earlier in some earlier shows, West did unfortunately lose his BSB ride. So interesting to see what Anthony West can do. I think that this showed that he is quite a versatile rider. Gammarino in fourth ahead of PJ. As we said, PJ now running the number two this year as opposed to the number 99.
PJ showed well early doors.
Yeah, but then had some tyre issues, so had to drop back a bit. Baldellini in sixth ahead of Gino Rea, Jacques, Robbie Rolfo still in the top 10, and then Australian Aidan Wagner in 10th with Nico Tirol in 11th. Then Moto3 refugee Zulfami Curran was 13th on his debut, and Stapleford, the reigning British Supersport champion, unable to score points in 16th.
It was it was good racing. I actually managed to wake up for that one, which is good. Normally for me, I watch it in the morning, but my current domestic situation means I don't have Sky and I don't be able to record things. So I had to get up and watch it live. And it was enjoyable racing. I was quite happy with what was going on. And you see the guys finishing. They were 2.7, 2.7, 2.9, 3.2. A gaggle of guys finishing within half a second of each other. Again, when you have racing, that's all you want.
I hope that all of the races continue like this. As we said, Thailand is the next stop for both World Superbike and World Supersport. Then once we get to the European rounds, the Stock 1000 and the Stock 600 classes will join up. Stock 600 is now part of the Supersport race because of some rule changes. I'm sure that the commentary team, unlike me, actually have an idea of how that works. So be sure to listen to either Eurosport, the World Feed, or whatever for information on that when it happens. Now coming to the most important part of the show, it is the MCN Fantasy League. We forgot to mention it last week.
And that's it for this week. Thank you very much.
That joke gets old. The username is MotoPop. It's better than your hoot moment from last show, so I can't complain too much.
Not really.
So the username is, or the league name is MotoPod, and the password is MotoPod, capital M, capital P, in both. As ever, MCN have changed the system again this year, so you now need a username and password instead of just the number thing, whatever. It seems to be working. Up until about 2 hours ago, no one had scored any points, but luckily, just before we started recording, the points magically came in, and leading the way overall is Team Apex, Sean McAleer with 125 points.
How the hell do you do that?
I have no idea. That's a lot of points. I didn't check his team, but I'm guessing that he probably had Jonathan Rea in it.
And looking at the fact that his name is Sean, spelled S-E-A-N, and it's McAleer, I would suggest he is of Northern Irish descent as well.
Probably. Then in second is Triumphant 1, Christopher Bellick, 121 points, tied with Bagheads, Chuck Chiasson, also 121, so still quite close at the top. I believe with this new version of the MCN Fantasy League, you can change your team after every race, so be sure to jump in there. Then in the Hosts League, 69th overall with Huge Ass Racing, Martin Darlington, 84 points, tied with Scott Bolton, Team Motodog. Scott down in 72nd, though, not quite sure how MCN divides their thing. Then I'm third in 74th, with 83 points, Team Necessary Faster. Dave Neal with Dipper Racing, 55 points, 102nd, ahead of Len Padilla, 135th, with 25 points. Neither Jules nor Jim have yet to form an MCN team, so for now we have those five hosts, but don't worry, Dave, I'm sure they would be behind you.
Mate, I don't think Jules will be. Maybe Jules is very, very good at the fantasy league. Maybe Jim, yeah, but no, it's fine. We'll make some changes, and we'll just it's a start. It's the start of the season. Everybody has their difficulties. We'll make some changes, and we'll come back stronger.
Exactly, that's the sort of talk we like to hear. So that's pretty much the show for this week. As we said, MotoGP, Moto2, Moto3 testing is coming up next. We will have Martin Darlington on the ground for us in Qatar. Depending on how many interviews he gets, we may divide it into two shows, where next week we focus solely on the MotoGP tests, and then after we focus on Moto2, Moto3, and combine that with the Thai World Superbike round, But yeah, we'll take it as it comes. But after this weekend of World Superbike Racing, I am very excited for the other race series in my life, i.e. MotoGP and BSB, to get underway. Dave, as you mentioned to me, lots of the BSB teams are off private testing. Not really any lap times from that, though, but definitely something to keep an eye on for Motopod fans.
It really is. There is a test in a couple of weeks at Cartagena. I think they do most years that we do have lap times. I think they do have transponders fitted. So that'll be the first indication, really, of where we are for British Superbikes. And then there are two tests almost back to back the last week of March, one at Silverstone on the Tuesday, one at Donington Park on the Thursday. I will be at the Donington Park test on the Thursday. We'll see what we can do while we're there. We'll take the old dictaphone and see if we can secrete a few interviews away and have a chat with some of the boys there and see how they're looking forward to the season.
Excellent. Hopefully the racing continues to be as good as it was in Phillip Island, and hopefully everyone makes it through the MotoGP test unhurt. Daniele Petrucci, unfortunately, won't be testing there. Instead, Michele Pirro, I believe, will be on his bike and running around.
A suitable stand-in.
Yep, definitely.
But yes, everybody stay safe. We will talk to you next week, hopefully with the return of Martin Darlington to the show, certainly with his interviews. Hope he has a great time out at Qatar. Bring your best for us, Martin. We look forward to hearing those. Everybody, have a great week. Thank you so much for listening. Harry, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Yep, definitely. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.